My name is Chris, very grateful, recovered alcoholic. It's good to be here. Nice introduction. No setup so that you fall on your butt. That's good. You guys did a great job. Concepts and traditions. Who knew? Guarded secret at our own fellowship. You know, it's amazing. Everybody seems to think they can do it any way they want, and that's just not the case. I'm so glad to be here. This is an honor for me to do, and any of you guys that dropped some money in that basket to help pay for this kind of stuff, thank you so much. Used to be a day you could travel for a couple $100, you could travel around the world, and not anymore. It's an expensive venture, especially flying from Texas. Nobody wants to fly from Texas anymore, so what the hell. It's just expensive, so thanks for doing it. And I'm glad to be here. A lot of you guys have heard CDs of mine. You kind of know where I'm going, what I'm about. And some of you have never heard me. I saw got a bunch of newcomers in here. Thank you so much for coming. Welcome. I hope you stick. We sure appreciate you being here. I nearly died twice, truly. I nearly died in Alcoholics Anonymous. I did a lot of crazy stuff, did some outside issues with my drinking for years, and came close to dying, but never closer than when I entered the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to tell you, folks, I'm pretty passionate about this. I think that what Troy was talking about with the concepts of, we want this to be here for the future. And but I don't want it just to be here, like a meeting, because I know some of you believe that getting sober is about meetings, and meetings is what gets me sober and keeps me sober. And if you believe that, you're going to hate this talk. And I'm going to feel real self-conscious, and I'm going to be real uncomfortable, and I don't want to do that. I love AA, and I love meetings, and before some of you start grinding your teeth, I'm not knocking meetings, but, meetings don't treat alcoholism, and if you think they do, it does, you're wrong. You're off the page. I got sober in 1987, finally. I've been sober about 21 years, and I work in a facility. I work at a treatment center where I get to watch hundreds of people die of this disease, and I've watched... I just can't tell you how many of us pass away, and I'm pretty passionate about this, folks. I get misconstrued. Sometimes people, I'm off the hook, but because I believe that the message that was given us was clear and concise, and we've managed to take a perfectly useful fellowship and a program and turn it into a kind of a cluster, in certain areas of the country. It's difficult, at best case scenario, getting sober, and if you want to do it your way, like I said, somebody said it earlier, why in the hell did you come here? We know how to get well. We have a 100% success rate in Alcoholics Anonymous. For the people that do the work, 100% success rate. And that's coming from Mr. Chronic Relapser here. You follow? I'll take full responsibility all those years in and out of the fellowship not being able to get sober. I don't have a problem in the world admitting that. But guys, we got a lot of newcomers out there that just flat don't know the questions to ask, and they get confused when they come in the door. Let me read something to you real quick. And back on page 155 in a Vision for You, Bill Wilson's talking about his first meeting with Dr. Bob, the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a match for you, an out-of-work stockbroker and a butt doctor. This is good stuff here, buddy. You got to know God's up there laughing his butt off, this. And see what you do with this, buddies. It was the usual situation, home in jeopardy, wife ill, children distracted, bills in arrears, and standing damaged. Sounds like a lot of our stories, doesn't it? He had a desperate desire to stop, but saw no way out, for he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. Painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, the man did not fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. You with us? This is the grinder that I'm up against. And I don't, you're free to agree or disagree with anything I say, folks. I travel about 40 weekends out of the year, and I don't do it because I'm particularly handsome or witty from the podium. I got a pretty straightforward message that can ring true with some of you in this room. And some of you, it's not going to ring true for. Some of you guys, you're going to leave this room tonight, and you're going to go over to Denny's and take my inventory the rest of the evening. You're more than welcome to do that. No. It matters to me that you do that. I'm sorry that some of you feel necessary to do that. But it's amazing how sensitive some of us can become. You know, if my sponsor told me that 90 meetings in 90 days will keep me sober, your sponsor lied to you. It might have kept him sober. But see, this is the question. This is where we're going to. And so, I mean, I'm a big book thumper. I'm a real alcoholic. And I don't believe in middle-of-the-road solution. And if you're staying sober in middle-of-the-road solution, like I said, have a nice meal at Denny's. Take everybody's inventory you want to. But when your butt falls off for about the umpteen million time and you're fixing to go to jail, you might want to walk into a group like this and nuzzle up next to some old big book thumper with an old busted up big book and say, could you help me? And I guarantee you, we'll show you how to get well. Alcoholism and drug addiction, folks, is hereditary. This is genetic in nature. Alcoholism, the jury's in. 10 years ago, you could have questioned it. Now, there's too many studies that show this is genetic in nature. It is passed. We talked about it earlier, from generation to generation. Just for jokes, for grins, how many of you guys can see active alcoholism in your families? Raise your hand. Whew. Boy, I wish we had a visual of that. You follow? And yet somebody's sitting in here right now wanting to blame their mama for why they're alcoholic. And you can blame half of your mama is probably why. The other half was daddy. Y'all get okay. A little pokey happened, and that's what happened. I mean, I got my dad's unusually high cholesterol. I'll eventually stroke out. It's a high cholesterol deal, guys. And I eat and I exercise and I pay attention. But, I mean, there's nothing I can do about it. Genetically, I caught that bullet. You know, with it, I got his bad lower back. I'm going to be kind of banged up when I get older because he was. And I can see that he passed that on. And I got a dose of his alcoholism. Thanks, Dad. I got his stunning good looks, too, so let's move on. I don't know. He was a good man, guys. But I work in an industry, guys. I love the hospital I work for, but I work in an industry that's just watered the bejesus out of our message. They have taken this message, and they turned it into some kind of I don't know what in certain areas. I don't know. This idea, this believe it. They all say the same thing. I love it. I wish we had an hour we could just talk about this. They talk about alcoholism as a disease. And you come into primary and then we're going to talk about alcoholism. Pete, did you know that alcoholism is a disease? You're not a bad person. You're a sick person. You're trying to get well here, right? And they start to get you a little excited about, oh, I see. I didn't set this thing up. I mean, I'm genetically predisposed. Oh, that's great. Then you go to your first process group and they say, so tell me why you drink. Shit, I thought, because I have a disease? Wrong. No. Tell me about the people you hang around and the music you listen to. Let me ask you a question, guys. How many of you guys drank when everything was going great in your life? Raise your hand. There you go. Let the record show every daggum hand in the place. How many of you drank and drug when life was crap? Hot outside. Cold outside, daylight, nighttime. Here's the trick question. How many when you were with the opposite sex? So there you go. No relationships for the first year. Oh, my gosh. Why we sound so stupid when we do this. Don't want to get triggered. If you're sitting in here believing your drinking's connected to the thing called a trigger, you are delusional. You are... If you have good insurance, come see me after this meeting. I'll get you hooked. No. This is what Dr. Bob's talking about at the end of the deal. He's saying, Bill Wilson's trying to explain to this guy. I mean, he's dying of alcoholism, but he doesn't understand what it means to be an alcoholic, a real alcoholic. Guys, I'm not talking about some little disco drunk. You know, have a little drink and puke straight up and say, oh my gosh, I got so sick last night, I'm going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. How cool is that? I mean, AA is full of people that don't understand what it is to be an alcoholic. That's heresy to say from the podium, but it's the truth. If you can go to 90 meetings in 90 days and stay sober and you've never worked a step, you can call yourself an alcoholic if you want to, but I have to question it. The book says if you can stay sober on a non-spiritual basis, you're not one of us. If the fellowship alone is keeping you sober, how cool is that? But don't try to palm that off to some little newcomer coming in that happens to be the real McCoy, because we're killing them. We have any grapevine reps in here? No? That's good. I'm going to go ahead and say this. They came. I know. Never mind. They just came out with this new piece of literature. I mean, where the confusion comes from. Everybody wants to take AA's, I mean, the treatment center's inventories. But AA has done a bang-up job confusing the issue out of everything. Any of you guys ever read this new one come out? This is the beginner's book. Great book. It's got some killer stories in it. But it's supposed to be how we got sober and stay sober in AA. That's what it says on the front. You follow? And so I haven't finished it all yet. I'm not halfway through it yet. It's 35 stories I've read so far out of the whole little booklet. It's about the same size as that piece of crap, Living Sober. But it's but I've read about 35 of the stories, and only four of them so far mention the 12 steps. Now, come on, guys. I'm a card-carrying member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I walked into my first meeting in 1980. I got sober in 1987. I've been around a long time. And I'm sorry. Everybody wants to take exceptions. You can't take AA's inventory. Just did. We need to take our fellowship back. We need to start understanding what this is about. Our primary purpose is to help the newcomer get well. We're not a social entity trying to help people. Come on in and don't drink and how, geez, no. Let me tell you what happened to me. I think there's probably about a billion ways to work the 12 steps. Bill Wilson said as close as we can adhere to the way the book outlines it, the better our chances are going to be. But I think there's probably 10 million ways that you can work the 12 steps. And I don't give a rat's butt how you work them. As people say, Chris, you're so rigid. I don't care how you work the steps. Just work them. Do them. I get tired of listening to people that have never worked any of the steps out there relapsing, taking AA's inventory. Make sense? They've never actually done the work, but they want to take AA's stuff. I find that hard to swallow. The solution, folks, guys, there's a thing called a fellowship. We're all going to go out and smoke in a little bit and visit, and some of us are going to go eat, and some of us are going to go home and go to bed, I hope. You've got to get up early. You'll follow? Fellowship, friends, buddies in the world. God, I got to meet so many people. Some of you guys I've talked to on the telephone, I didn't even know, put a name with a face. How cool it is to meet some of you guys that I've talked to 1,000 times on the phone. Pete, God, I don't know how in a circle, in our sponsorship lineage, that we didn't come across each other. The fellowship is wonderful. But combined to a thing called the program, that's what gets us well. You can't stay sober in the fellowship alone. Not if you're the real McCoy. We got to stop offering that as a solution for alcoholism. The program is the 12 steps. That's what the traditions tell us. My twin brother and I caught the bullet. I got an identical twin in Dallas. A lot of you guys know him. And my little sister didn't, and my half-sister didn't. They freak us out. I saw them at Christmas time. They're still drinking the same stupid mimosa they poured at Christmas. You know, I don't know. I've never understood that. You know, they just get it, and they'll take it, and they'll play with it and play with it. They want to go, let's go have a cocktail. You know what that means? Let's go have a cocktail. That means one drink. I don't understand this. I don't understand. They've never had this thing called the phenomenon of craving. I've set out with my little sister 100 times to have a cocktail. And they end up, you know, with me. You want another one? No. Just one for me. I got to get back to work. You know, I'm going with you. You know, I have to go back too. You want another one or not? She doesn't understand it. No, thank you. Don't you understand? I'm starting to feel it. Me too. You want another drink or not? I don't know. Raised in the same family, guys. No goofy stuff going on. It's just the genetics. That's what did it. And so my twin brother and I, we went off to Houston, Texas, and I wanted to be a professional chef. And early on, I was talented, and I was... I, uh, I hit my stride, buddy. I did well. And the Europeans loved me because I was drinking, and I could drink huge quantities of alcohol when I was younger. And then I got to a spot where I couldn't drink quite so much, and then I got to a spot where I couldn't drink any. You with us? Guys, it's going to work for you for a while, and then it's going to stop. And that's where Bill Wilson's talking about in this chapter we were just talking. It says you're going to know loneliness like few do. You're going to get to a spot where you can't imagine life with it, and you can't imagine living life without it. And that's a pisser. And here's what I'm saying, guys. This is why I travel. This is why I want to talk to some of you guys, is because if you've got to the spot and you don't want to do it anymore, man, you're my man. You're the person I want to visit with, because I want to give you the hope that you need to finish this work at a quick pace, get to the other side, and recover. I can't believe in today's day that you can get up from a podium and introduce yourself as a recovered alcoholic and catch crap about it after the meeting. And yet Bill Wilson says it on the title page. This is the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered. It tells you to introduce yourself as a man who has recovered. But my counselor says you'll never recover. Your counselor's a fruitcake. And if he wants to remain sick the rest of his life, more power to him. I don't choose to do that. It's one of the reasons we have such a tough time keeping the young adults, the young aged people in our meetings. We don't ever have a problem getting folks to come to AA, folks. They get out there with the stuff they're doing today and the drinking and the drugging, and oh my gosh, they catch on fire out there, and they a slow burn, and they come in here with both, on fire. You follow? And then we push them away by explaining that every day is a day that they could relapse, and every day you can get just crap you make up out of the clear blue sky. That's not what my book says. 10-Step Promises says you're either going to recover or you're not. My father died of alcoholism. He died sober, dry. He died. Hated AA. Hated it. Would go every time his butt caught on fire, and he'd stay for a while and do okay for a little bit, and then he would just go crazy, just go nuts, and pick a fight with somebody and have an excuse to drink and be off to the races again. Loved him. Y'all understand that? It's called untreated alcoholism. Guys, not drinking doesn't treat alcoholism. Y'all understand that? I guess if I could have one word out there that would ring true in every AA meeting tonight all over the world, not drinking doesn't treat alcoholism. If not drinking treated alcoholism, then hospitals would have 100% success rate. We can detox you, get you past the physical, but we can't get you past the mental. That's what Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob in those first 100, they said. That's why we guarantee you that a spiritual experience is on the way for you. That spiritual experience that you may not even want to have is the thing that's going to save your butt. You follow? Everybody wants to take exception. I got in a pissing contest with a guy in Scotland last week about this. Is this a two-part program or a three-part program? Well, Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob paints a pretty clear picture. It's two-part, the physical allergy coupled with the mental obsession. But underneath it all is this what the book calls a spiritual malady, this internal discomfort. Why is it that when I stop drinking, the further away I get from that drink, the worse I become? Why is it that we got so many people in this room right now, just like I did for 7 years, picking up chip after chip after chip? Because you wanted it the first time. And the best thing we can do in our fellowship today is dump it back in the newcomer's lap and say, well, he just didn't want it bad enough. Did he not want it bad enough, or did we sit on him until he went crazy and went did the one thing that we know to do to treat that internal condition? I had a friend of mine 2 weeks ago walked into a filling station and locked the door behind him in the bathroom and shot himself. Been in and out of the program for 4 years. Never finished the steps. You with me? Alcohol didn't kill him. Drugs didn't kill him. Alcoholism killed him. The internal discomfort when we don't drink is horrendous. Make sense, guys? You watch people come into the fellowship and they catch fire to this, and somebody's over there with a bucket of water ready to pour water on them, making fun of it. We shouldn't do that, folks. I was pretty successful for a while in that old food business and made some money, and I lost some money, and I made some money, and I lost some money. You know how that is. And I did okay with the Little Women, and I had some girlfriends, and I lost some girlfriends, and it's gradually got to, I was about a 19-year period when I was drinking and doing some other outside issues, and it got to be a mess, folks, and I was crazy. And trying to save a marriage in the early 80s, a marriage and a business. It was a restaurant and a catering company I was trying to save. And I went to my first AA meeting. And I knew about AA because my father had gone to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he didn't like it, but I thought, what the hell, I'm going to give it a shot. And I had a counselor that said, Chris, you need to go to AA. So I did. I'd been in and out of therapy for 10 years. I'd been taking medication for years. People thought I was had a little anxiety disorder. Truth is, I just like to drool, and so they gave me. I love the doctors. I'm still today the biggest fan of therapy there is. If you're in recovery and you're not seeing a therapist, buddy, you ought to borrow some money and go see one. Most of them work on a sliding scale, and it's a great way to really jumpstart your program if you want to get some truth about yourself. I'm a big fan of therapy. But these doctors, every one of them were giving me another. Chris, you're not an alcoholic. You're just depressed. Here's a pill. Hot damn, a pill. Who knew? Who knew? Yeah, at clinical, this is, and they painted a picture, and they showed me, and I'm taking this pill. Oh, Chris, you're not depressed. You have an anxiety disorder. Here's another pill. Chris, it's adult attention deficit disorder. Listen, this is the latest thing. Here, let me show you this article and blah, blah, blah. And so you with me? So now I'm taking another pill, and which worked better if you chop it up and snort it. That was not on my prescription, but I'm a trained professional, and I know how to do this kind of stuff. Anyway, I'm taking 7 pills a day, folks, trying to keep myself medicated, and I am crazy. I've told this story 1,000 times. Y'all know these little, in Texas, we have these little motor courts, these little motels, and the vacancy sign is always shorted out. Any of y'all see Motel Hell? Remember that? It's my favorite, all-time favorite. Makes me want to go cook somebody. It's the best movie. Little lady in the back. That's not very spiritual. I know it. But it was a great movie. See if you can find it. But anyway, they got that sign. There's an arcing out, the vacancy sign, vacancy, And that's exactly what my head was doing. I could be talking to you, and we could be going along pretty good, and all of a sudden it just, what are we doing? Where are we at? I've lost it. I'm taking all these medications, and I'm drinking on top of it, and I am a fried pie. The book says, in doctor's opinion, it says, our problems pile up on us, and they become astonishingly difficult to solve. Guys, give me a big problem like, I don't know, rent or a relationship. I can handle that, and that's no problem. It's little stuff, like, do you wear the black socks or the white socks? You'll follow? And 30 minutes later, I'm in a fetal position in the closet because I can't figure this out. Everything's piling up, you know, and I mean, life is a bear, and I don't know whether to go to work or go home, and I'm not safe to drive with anymore, and I'm hearing things, and my life sucks, folks. I can't cook in the industry anymore because my hands are shaking too bad, I went to my first AA meeting in 1980, and I walked in the door, and they said, Chris, do you have a problem with alcohol? And I'd been drinking, and I said, yes. And I sat down with a vision of that quart of beer in the truck when I got finished with this butt whipping. And we went around a room, and everybody introduced themselves, and there were some people in there that they didn't know if they were alcoholic or not, but we talked about everything under the sun except alcoholism. And it was my first introduction to AA, and we did not talk about the book, and we did not talk about sponsorship. We didn't talk about anything. We talked about some lady's relationship. And I know y'all have heard this, and some of y'all just grind it. You believe that meetings are a place to go talk about that. I just simply do not agree. And we can just agree to not agree. I think I don't mind if you did it. Do we have to do so much of it? We just did junior therapy sessions until the cows came home, and when we finished trying to fix your life, you with me? We'd tell another war story. And I can't relate to your war stories, guys, because I got to tell you something. I come from a family that knows lawyers, and I didn't go to jail, and I didn't rob liquor stores, and I stayed out of trouble, and I'm a work ethic. My father gave me that, some great work ethics, and I'm not doing some of the stupid stuff that some of y'all are doing in here. You with me? Everybody says, well, you have to identify. Well, see, Bill Wilson, he wrote this book. He said, we got a common problem and a common solution. He said, what we're supposed to identify with is the disease. When you put alcohol in your body, can you control how much you use every time? No. Given sufficient reason, like, hey, you're on probation, or you promised somebody you love that you wouldn't do it, can you manage the decision to not drink? No. That's all the identifying you need. Because that's what alcoholism is. Make sense, guys? We sit in these meetings and we sit there and kill each other with our stupid war stories until I want to puke. And here, listen, this will go on at Denny's. I can't believe that little one-eyed guy said that up there. All we have is our stories. No, that's not true. Guys, if all I have is my stupid stories, shame on me. Do you want to know how I stayed sober for 21 years? It's not sitting around remembering eating out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas. I did that. But do you think any of y'all think that you're ever going to eat out of a dumpster? There's no chapter in the back of this book called Into Scare. None. In a 12-step call, you better be armed with a story about yourself. Speaking from the podium, you better be armed with a story about yourself. Tell a little bit. That's how we get to know each other. You with us? But guys, sitting in a meeting, why are we telling another stupid war story? Do you think anybody in this room is remotely interested about your last trip to jail? Ooh, oh my gosh, I don't want to go to jail. I'm not going to drink anymore. And we all laugh and we all say, oh, no kidding. Do you think you're going to eat out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas? Probably, brother. But this idea that we have to keep it green, we don't. I have to keep, the book says if you'll stay spiritually connected, you'll stay sober the rest of your life. You with us? And yet we want to be so quick and quick in the meetings to tell people if they forget, if you forget your last drink, you probably haven't had it. Oh. I love war stories. Don't anybody take me out of context. I absolutely, in a 12-step call, when I sit down with a newcomer, you got to have a story, folks. If you try to approach this guy without a story, you're going to have a fight on your hand. You with us? About the time you start talking about the big book, you're going to find it shucks up your butt, and he don't want to talk about this. Unless he, see, that's what Bill Wilson did with Dr. Bob in that chapter. He sat down, and they talked about a few stories, and then Bill Wilson did what? He didn't say, hey, let's get together tomorrow night and tell some more stupid stories. He didn't do that. Dr. Bob slowed down after the storyteller and he said, buddy, you're not drinking now. How'd you do it? You with us? And Bill Wilson told him. Told him about his spiritual experience as a result of working the steps in Towns Hospital. And that's what we're supposed to do. 7 years I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous and can't stay sober. 1987, I'm working for my twin brother up in North Texas, and November night, I drove home about 3 o'clock and stopped and got a 12-pack of beer and a stack of return checks in my mailbox. Oh my gosh, 35 years old, and here I go again. I've bankrupted another checking account. I'm going to have to go to my sister-in-law tomorrow, and she's going to work it out for me again. You with me? Guys, I'm just sick and tired of being a loser. I'm sick and tired of letting people down. I'm sick and tired of picking up chips in your stupid meetings and not being able to follow it through with any kind of sobriety. Y'all understand that? Family members don't. Family members think that what we're doing is blowing smoke. I've heard counselors say it. You know, an alcoholic, if his mouth's moving, he's lying. I'm going to tell you something. That's not true. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's not. I've told plenty of people that I was going to stay sober. Guys, I intended to get sober in 1980 when I walked in that first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was a good woman, and I was trying to save that marriage, and I meant it. I just didn't know how, because you're giving me mixed messages. You're telling me to work the steps at a pretty good clip. Let's have a necessary spiritual experience. And this guy over here pulled me aside at the coffee back there and said, don't listen to that. All you got to do right now is just go to a bunch of meetings. Get your feet on the ground and everything's going to be okay. Meeting makers make it. I was to prove him wrong. You with us? My disease has progressed really far, guys. Now I'm to a spot where I'm not doing so well. I used to drink a case of beer and go to work. And now I can't drink a couple of beers and I'm slurring my words. And I'm in end-stage alcoholism. I need a spiritual experience so that the obsession won't get me and tell me to go drink. But I'm getting mixed messages. Take your time. Go fast. You've got to have a spiritual experience. Don't worry about that God shit. Well, what? Take what you want and leave the rest. Thorough from the very start. Isn't it truth? Fearless and thorough from the very start. No, no, no. Easy does it. I'm going crazy. I've thought myself into a cul-de-sac. Think, think, think. Oh, that doesn't apply to you. It's death by one-liners. Most of them taken out of context. I sat on the floor of that little apartment, and got up and went to the medicine cabinet, pulled down a couple of bottles of pills, and then I went and fed the ferrets. And I went back and ate the pills. I'm just done. And nothing romantic. Y'all have heard me talk about this a thousand. I just suicide is the absolute coward's way out. Nothing in me wanted to die. I just didn't want to feel the way I was feeling anymore. I didn't want to continue to let people down the way I was letting them down, including myself. And I just was done. About the time those pills hit my stomach, I heard a voice that said, "Don't do this. Go back to AA." Was not a thought. You know, Chris, this is kind of a stupid idea. You know, you probably a little right. It was a voice that said, "Don't do this, go back to AA." And I'm arguing with a voice. Y'all understand that? If Vita said, "Get naked, move to Africa, be a missionary, pierce your ear," I'd have done it. Whatever you want me to do. But this voice said, "Go back to AA," and I want to argue with it. Because I've been to AA. Guys, I've done it all. I've been to the church. I did counseling. I'm on 7 medications a day trying to stay level. I'm not having a very good life here. And now the voice wants me to go back to AA. I made myself sick that night, and I laid back on the bed. The next morning I woke up, came to, and I heard the voice one last time. It says, "Don't do this. Go back to AA." And I made an appointment with a doctor that morning, and I went back. During the day, we got really busy at work, and I had to work, so I was there till late. It was about 6 o'clock when I left the meeting, and I knew there was a meeting close to where the bindery was. My brother owned a book bindery, and that's where I was working. And a guy had 12-stepped me 3 years. Some of you guys are always saying, "I don't think I've ever had a successful 12-step call." Trust me, you have. If you've ever given this message of hope to anybody, trust me, because it'll come back and bite them in the butt. And that's exactly what happened to me in 1987. I remember this guy had taken me to a meeting one night after a blackout. First blackout I ever had. And he came and got me. He said, "Chris, you want to go to this meeting?" And I says, "I don't think so." Again, prejudice, preconceived ideas about my experience in the past. Sometimes we only get one shot at these folks. And I went back to this meeting, and I believe one of the first spiritual experiences I had was I got out of that truck and I walked in the back door knowing I didn't want to do it. And I walked in the back door, and there's a long shotgun meeting, and everybody's smoking in there. Back in the day, we could still smoke in meetings. And of course, we ruined it because everybody had to have 7 or 8 cigarettes sticking out of their mouths all at the same time. You can't just smoke one. Ceiling's lowered and they're all laughing. And guys, y'all don't realize how self-conscious you were when you first got here. Some of y'all are brand new in here, and that's exactly your feeling. Really self-conscious. Everybody's laughing, and you know it's about you, and it's not. It's about all of us, you know? They assured me they were laughing with me. They were not. When I walked in the door, they were laughing at me, trust me, because I big old gut, and I big old long hair. I looked like a grizzly bear, and I had a patch that's always crooked, and it looks like an earmuff. It's just so, trust me, guys, if any of you guys ever put a patch on or something like that, you'll never get laid if it looks like an earmuff. I can promise. But I walked in, I was feeling real self-conscious, and I looked around like this, and everybody was laughing, and I recognized a few people in there, and I knew I was up for the same stuff I was in before, and I backed out. I started to back out, and a little girl got between me and the door. Guys, I want to tell you, somebody asked me this. What was that? She put herself between me and the door and got her finger in my belt loop and says, "Sit down, cowboy. You with me?" Now, guys, this is the power of God. If it had been one of you good-looking young men in the front row, I'd have whipped your ass. You follow what I'm saying? I just sit down, your own cowboy. I'm out of here, you know. But this little girl, this little 19-year-old girl, she wasn't off in some little young adult meeting talking about young adult crap. She was sitting in mainstream AA doing what she was supposed to do, watching for a newcomer. Turned out her sponsor couldn't get to me fast enough, and she gave her the high sign, and the little girl said okay and went and got me. Stuck me. You do what you're asked to do in AA. And she set me down in a chair, and they got me a cup of coffee and a roll of paper towels to clean up the constant spillage. And they went around the room that night, and they shared some hope. The chairperson took charge of the meeting. Imagine that. The chairperson actually took charge of the meeting. Well, this is the way we do it. Who's got the problem? A little guy sitting in there dying of alcoholism. Well, we're not going to talk about him. Let's talk. You were having a relationship problem. Yeah, let's talk about relationships in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think I want to puke. God. And this guy knew that Chris Raymer was dying in that meeting. And he said, let's share some hope with this cat. Guys, that's what they did real quick. They went around the room and they shared miracles with me. They shared how their life had changed as a result of working the 12 steps. Nobody got in a... Just hope is all they shared with me. I'm less than 24 hours away from a suicide attempt. I don't want to be there. And they shared the one thing that I needed the worst. Boy, I'm telling you, and I was listening. I hear people all the time. I don't remember anything about my first meeting. I remember everything about that meeting. Everything about that meeting. And they were excited, and they were laughing, and they were glad I was there. And at the end of the meeting, an old guy came up, and he had these old glasses, and he looked over, and he said, "Buddy, listen, let me just ask you one question, because the book asked me to ask you this. Are you done?" Well, you know, one day at a time. He said, "That's not what I ask you. We have a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. We do not stay sober one day at a time. If you would like that parlor trick to work for you, give it a shot. But you've been in AA for 7 years trying that, haven't you? I'm not knocking it. If it's working for you, go for it. But that's not what the big book says. The big book says, ask the newcomer if he's done. I don't know how to stay sober. Guys, y'all are going to show me how to do this one day at a time. But it starts with a commitment. And so one of the worst things that we do in AA today is that we don't qualify the drunk anymore. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Keep coming back. Yeah, you know what? They're going to come back until their head flies off. And there's a great guy out there that wrote an article. They talk specifically. He's the guy that wrote Slaying the Dragon. And he wrote this article about these little windows of opportunity. And I think everybody in this room knows what that's about. You come to AA for the first time. You go to some of the other fellowships for the first time. And you put the plug in a jug and you dry out. And all of a sudden, everything starts to get clear. And you start feeling good. And everything's going to be golden. You with us? And then some asshole in the corner wants to make fun of you because you're on a pink cloud. Let me tell you something, folks. There's no such thing as a pink cloud. We got to stop ridiculing people that get happy in this program, because that's what this is about. Ooh, we don't want to get too spiritual. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And every person in here deserves that spiritual experience, and you deserve to get to take it to a spot that spiritual malady will leave you, and the depression will go away, and you get a new sense of direction about your life, and you get some answers to some questions about what you want to do. I mean, this is cool stuff. You think it's just about not drinking one stupid day at a time? This is about keeps, guys. This is about real power. That's what we're supposed to be doing. That old guy asked me point blank, "Let me ask you again." I said, "Yes, yes, yes, I'm done." And the next day they brought me back, and we went to a meeting, and then we got in the back room and did a third step prayer. And we went to got some food and came back, and they gave me a notebook, and they said, "Chris, while you're sitting home detoxing, why don't you jot down some names of some people that you really hate? We're going to start working on a fourth step. You with me?" Just like that. 2 weeks later, I've got a completed fourth step, ready to do a fifth step, and I'm sitting on the tailgate of my truck, and the obsession to use is lifted. It's 21 years ago, folks, and I haven't had a desire to use or do dope or anything in 21 years. I sponsor a whole bunch of guys, folks, and the people that'll get off dead center, that means get off their butt and do what we ask them to do, they have the same experience I had. God, everybody wants to argue that. Those guys had me busy, folks. We were talking about it, Pete, earlier. Everybody in this AA needs a job. If you're sitting in this room and you're sitting around the periphery and you wonder why you can't stay sober, it's because you won't get a job. If you get a service position, coffee, cleanup, chair, read, chip, collection, I'm sorry. Did you think this was free? Book says right up front that the price has to be paid. You think you can just come in this room and sit and be... Let me tell you what we're seeing real quick. I'm going to run out of time. One of the things that we're seeing in the industry, in the treatment center industry, and we're seeing it in AA, I've been around speaking for years, and so I've got this huge network of people that I know all over the world, and a lot of these guys are experiencing the same thing. We were talking about it the last few weeks. I was talking to Julia in Switzerland about it. It's same stuff we're seeing in all the fellowships. We're seeing lots of sobriety, old-time sobriety, people with 10 or more years relapsing, 15 years, 21 years, 25 years, because the pharmaceutical companies are working overtime creating sleep aids that are non-addictive, that are highly addictive if you happen to be an alcoholic. And we're watching them crumble like a deck of cards. We're watching this thing called complacency kill alcoholics. Guys, I don't live off of the spiritual experience I had 21 years ago. I had a great spiritual experience. 2 weeks after I finished this work, I'm sitting on the tailgate of my pickup truck, and I'm ready. I haven't even finished even close to half of my amends, but I'm praying and meditating on a daily basis. I'm practicing the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12. They've got me down at the club answering the phones and emptying the trash. You with me? 12-step stuff. I'm being of service wherever I can. Because on 129, it says in those first days of convalescence, we're supposed to help out as much as possible with the newcomer because that's what keeps us sober. It's helping you that allows me to stay sober. Make sense? I'm sitting there on the tailgate of that car, and I'm going to tell you, folks, the hair stood up on the back of my neck, and it dawned on me that I hadn't obsessed about alcohol in I don't know how long, and that I had gotten taken to a place of neutrality around the booze. It was a miracle. Because those old guys didn't sit on their ass in that meeting and say, you haven't been sober long enough to chair a meeting. You haven't been sober long enough to answer the phones. You haven't been sober long enough. You haven't been sober long enough. You haven't been sober long enough. Let me tell you something, folks. We don't have enough people in the trench working. We got the same people in the trench, been there since you got here, and that's why you're still here. Thank you. But guys, even after a while, you get tired of doing all the work. We got all these newcomers coming in, and none of them can stay sober. Why? Because they won't get in the trench and help us out. Again, there's no free ride here. God, see, God's going to use you. Bill Wilson says, in your own way, you're going to carry this message. You're not going to carry it like Chris Raymer. I've said it from a million podiums. We got enough Chris Raymers. One of these is enough. Thank you very much. We got enough Pete. Thank you very much. Plenty. Maybe more than we bargained for. Come on. How many people? But you need to understand, see, that everybody here, you're going to be able to approach somebody that I couldn't begin to approach. Some people will hear the message from me because I'm in your face. And some people, they need a very gentle way to put this message out there. But it needs to be put out. Make sense? And everybody thinks they're different. Oh, I couldn't possibly do that. I can't possibly do that. And if you're not careful, you'll look around AA and you'll find somebody that'll let you off the hook. You haven't been sober long enough. We got to stop that crap. Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob didn't. What would have happened? He's in his 9th days in Towns Hospital. Well, I can't wait till I get a year, and I'm going to go do a 12-step call. And Dr. Bob, he sponsored over 5,000 people in his 15 years of sobriety. You go figure that out. He was taking people one and a half a day through the work the whole time he was alive. Guys, look at the archives. I've read them. I've looked at them. This is real McCoy. And yet you're sitting on your butt. You've been in the fellowship for 6 months and you're not sponsoring anybody. And these guys come back to the hospital. It used to be an anomaly. 15 years when I started working out there, it was an anomaly. We got a guy, he's 20 years sober. He relapsed. Come, and we'd get him. We'd go have lunch with him and talk, tell us what happened. You with us? Now, shit, there's so many in there, you can't talk to them all. I bet you I've got 15 guys in that hospital right now that had 15 or more years and lost it. And I walk up to him and I ask him, I said, buddy, tell us what happened. I've been asking it for all of the years. How many guys are you sponsoring? None. What the hell did you think was going to happen? Time off for good behavior? I was about 8 months sober. And I'm over at a group there in North Texas, up in Lewisville, Texas, and there's an old geezer in there washing coffee cups. He's about 30 years sober when I was there, and he's passed away now. His name was ML. He's washing coffee cups. It's back in the day we had real ones, and he was washing, and I'm emptying ashtrays, and I wasn't smoking, but I'm emptying the damned ashtrays because he asked me to help him, and I'm not doing anything anyway. My social calendar is zip, nothing going on for Chris Raymer. But I'm trying to help this guy out, and I'm doing everything they asked me to do, because this time around, guys, I'm not going to do it my way. You with me? You hear people in AA all the time, I'm working my program. I'm working my program. Why don't you work the program? Works better, a little faster. I don't know what to tell you. Your program keeps getting you drunk, and I'm working, okay. And so he's asking me to help him out, and I do that. And I've got it all, everybody else is outside smoking. And we're just, he and I in this room, and we've turned off all the outside lights, and we're sitting there in this little kitchen, and it's only illumination. And I'm sitting there talking to this guy, and he gets quiet for a minute, and I said, buddy, are you okay? And he turns around, and he's got these glasses, and he takes his glasses off, and he's wiping the glasses, and he's got tears in his eyes. He's 30 years sober. He's got tears in his eyes. And he said, buddy, I got to tell you, I heard you sharing the meeting tonight, and I was so grateful that you were there. It's nice to have you here. I got to tell you point blank. We need you. I was 14 years old sitting out on a country road near Kerrville, Texas. I had my first thought of suicide, 14. I'm 3 years away from my first drink, and all I want to do is die. I come from a beautiful family, well-known family. I have an identical twin brother, lots of love. I'm so empty inside. I feel so uncomfortable in my skin. And my prayer to God that night was, God, I just want to feel useful. Now here I am downstream, and this old geezer looks around from a kitchen sink and says, we need you. And all the dots connected. Guys, I got to tell you, I got to say this and let you go. We have a tendency in AA to trivialize this because we think we've got an endless supply of alcoholics coming into the room. And some will help and some will won't and some will get it and some won't. I'm going to tell you, we don't have near enough people getting sober. We don't have near enough people staying sober. The reason is because we've trivialized this. We'll say the prayer in a minute when we leave here and everybody will say, keep coming back. It works if you work it. They do all over the world. And I got to tell you something, folks. We need you is light years ahead of keep coming back. You need to understand why you're coming back. We need you to do what only you can do in this fellowship. The legacies of service apply to everyone. Not just the people that happen to be good from the podium or well organized. Everybody gets to participate in their own way to carry a message of hope to the newcomer. Stop sitting on the sideline. Stop thinking that your case is different. You're suffering from low self-esteem? My butt. Big Book says on page 62, selfish and self-centeredness, that's the root of the problem. You want to feel better about yourself? Some of you grinding your teeth. Good. Swallow. Because we've all got to get on the same page here. You want to feel better about yourself? Here's your choice. Go stand in front of the mirror back there in the bathroom and tell everybody that you're a good boy. I'm a good boy. I'm a precious child of God, and I deserve to be happy. You do that. And then walk away with a feeling that you've just lied to yourself. You follow? Or do this. The next time you go to an AA meeting and you've got 30 days of sobriety, 3 weeks of sobriety, I don't care, 30 years of sobriety. Walk into the AA meeting. Right before you do it, before you get out of your car, say, God, show me somebody in there that's busted up that I can help. Don't do that prayer unless you mean it. Because they'll hit you at the door. And you'll walk in and you'll sit at the meeting and the meeting will start. And all of a sudden you'll be looking around, checking the babes out. You know, yay, babe, how you doing? And everything will be going good. And everything will be going. And all of a sudden your eye will just stop. On the one. Yours. Your new project. You follow? And he'll be sitting there looking uncomfortable. You won't have to wonder who he is. He's got that look on his face, but tattooed across it. I'm new. He's going to be acting hip slick and cool like he's got all the answers, but you know damn good well he's not, because he's doing the same thing you did when you got there. You with us? Walk up to him, buddy. Introduce yourself. First and last name. Thank you very much. Anonymity at the group level is absurd. First and last name, thank you very much. Buddy, you got a big book? What's a big book? Let me show you. Let me show you what this is about. Show him where the coffee is. You think he knows? He doesn't know. Is it free? Does he got to pay for it? Where are the bathrooms? Can you smoke here? Tell him, take him under your wing. Is that literature free? You got to pay for that literature. You with us? We assume that the newcomer knows. They don't know. Sidle up next to him. Make him your project. And the guy says, man, buzz off. Buzz off. Go find you somebody else to work with. But you're going to walk away from the meeting understanding exactly what we're talking about. That this is about giving back. The book said, you give back, God will take care of your stuff. And that's what this whole thing is about. The circle triangle, I'm responsible. I'm responsible for what? Coming to a meeting? Geez, thanks. What are you doing when you're at the meeting? Make sense, guys? Sarcasm bothers you? I apologize. I'll say it, guys. We need you. Bunch of you little thumpers in here that I know are carrying big books, been taking the heat for years. Thank you for sticking. Thank you for sticking. You ladies in this fellowship, I don't think I've done a talk in the last 10 years that I didn't say this. Thank you for sticking. If you've got a year or so and you're around this program and you're staying, and I know you got we put so much responsibility on the women in this fellowship. They got to raise the kids and work and be a wife and come to meetings. And then we just expect them to do it all. And a lot of them do. And I got to tell you, there's not enough of them out there doing the work. It's just, it's a tough deal. You young people that are here taking the crap from the older guys because you're young. You don't have young adult alcoholism. You just got the same crappy alcoholism that's killing me too. And we need your help. And we need your help. We need you in the trench with us helping. Because that's where the spiritual path lies, folks, is in the trench. It's not on the periphery out watching. It's in the trench. For every one of you that stayed in touch and helping another drunk, thank you. For the rest of you, we need you. Thank you for asking me. Thank you, dear. Appreciate it. Bless you.